Reconvene out of our closed session and welcome to the open session of the Thursday, October 1st meeting of the Los Osos Community Services District Board. And can we start off with a roll call, please? Okay, so with that, we'll go ahead and start off with Mr. Seitz. Could we have announcements out of the closed session?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. At approximately 6 o'clock, the board did adjourn to closed session regarding those items on the agenda. As I've previously reported, just because an item is listed on the closed session agenda, it does not mean that it was discussed in closed session. We do try to keep a significant portion of existing litigation on the closed session agenda because things develop quickly and we do have the 72-hour posting requirement. So we do try to keep some flexibility by keeping a majority of existing litigation on the closed session. But as to tonight, the closed session, which is existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, which allows the Board of Directors to meet with its legal counsel regarding existing litigation. We did discuss the ongoing bankruptcy. The Board, on a 3-0 vote with two directors being absent, did authorize the retention of the law firm of Thornburg and I want to make sure I get their names pronounced right. Griffith and Thornburg. This is Joe Scholder. As you may recall, Joe was our existing bankruptcy attorney. He has since left the Mickelson Law Firm to the Griffith Thornburg Law Firm. And we have agreed to continue to retain his services as our bankruptcy counsel. The board on a 3-0 vote again authorized District Legal Counsel to sign an agreement with Griffith and Thornburg and to execute and sign the substitution of attorney. I did place 10 of the agreements in the back counter back there for you folks that are interested in seeing what that letter agreement looks like. It's back there for public review. The other thing that we did discuss in closed session, now I got my paperwork here. We did discuss the litigation with Montgomery Watts and Harza, but no reportable action was taken. We did discuss the ISJ. That gives you a little bit of update on that. The closed session agenda also includes the retaining of a public employee, generally speaking, the new general manager. That was both on the September 8th agenda, closed session agenda, as well as today's agenda. We did meet and discuss evaluations, but the board did not take reportable action. And lastly, the board did discuss the Measure B litigation, but again, took no reportable action. And that concludes my closed session report.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. And just some housekeeping here. Mr. Berman from the Morro Bay National Estuary Program can't get here till 7:30, so we're going to do his presentation after the general public comment. And then before we start with our first presentation, there's a public service announcement on a countywide coalition food drive. We have a local high school student here to make a brief announcement.
Hello, my name is Lauren, and I'm from the Morro Bay High School Key Club, and right now we're raising money for the Hunger Walk, along with the Trinity United Methodist Church in Los Osos. So 75% of the money we make will go to local hunger relief, and 25% of it will go to international hunger relief. And so if you want to make a donation, I'll be here in the front row for about 10 minutes. And if you're at home, my number is 534-9599. and so you can call me to make a donation. The Hunger Walk will take place at Trinity United Methodist Church on October 11th, which is about a week from now, and it's on a Sunday. And so if you want to donate, you have to donate before then. So thank you.
And it's also, there's six organizations countywide, and in Los Osos, the speaker identified the one location. And again, thank you for that. And Director Kelly, it's, what time does it start? 2 o'clock. And they'll welcome people that show up on the day of the event. And 25, as she gave the numbers for the distribution. Thank you. And so next, we're going to have a proclamation today. And we have Mr. Tom Martin from Mission Disposal. And I have a proclamation here. I'm going to read it out. And this is from the Community Service District of Los Osos, State of California, a proclamation of appreciation to Mission Country Disposal Company for their support to the citizens of Los Osos in keeping our community clean and trash-free, and for the assistance offered to the Los Osos Community Services District staff in helping to resolve citizen requests for disposal services. And many thanks, signed by all of the board members. And again, Mr. Martin, we appreciate your service to the community and Mission Country, and I'd like to present this to you. Thank you very much. Minutes. So for those that want to speak now, go ahead to the podium if you could form a line. I mean, can I get a rough look at how many people want to do general public comment? 1, 2, 3. So it looks like we might make it through this period. And then if anyone does want to speak later, we, of course, would have let them speak at the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Sparks, before they start, we're having some technical difficulties with the timer, so unfortunately we have to use the manual timer. So,
okay, yeah, so you won't see the blinking lights when you get a minute left. So, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Dove. I am the president of Cabrillo Estates Property Owners Association, and I live on Travis Drive. I'm here tonight to present some issues concerning the lighting district in Cabrillo Estates, the lighting service. As you are aware, the 218 vote failed in June. Since that time, I have spoken to a number of residents in the community about continuing to keep the lighting going, and I found that quite a few of them are in favor of that. I have found that a number of people voted against the assessment ballot because mainly two reasons. They were concerned about the amount of increase from $8 a year to almost $55 a year, and also they had some questions about the ability of the Los Osos CSD to continue to raise the amount. What I've learned is there is a lot of interest in continuing the lighting and in some way that if we can, and we would like to look at ways to possibly renegotiate the amount, or we're even thinking about contacting PG&E about installing LED lighting to see if that would help to lower the amount of energy and make it more efficient. So I understand this is coming back up later on this year. So one more question I had for you is, I would like to know what percentage of the residents who received the ballot actually voted. I understand it was about a 2-to-1 vote against the assessment amount, but I don't know how many actually voted, so I would like that information if possible. Okay.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Cooney, do you recall the percentage that voted?
No.
I can't off the top of my head. There's like 220 ballots. I thought it was on the order of 60.
It was 100 and some.
Yeah, like 60%.
Yeah. But we could look it up. Obviously, we have it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker, please.
George Taylor, Los Osos. My question is for district council, and it has to do with the substitution of attorneys.
Attorney who is moving to a different law firm. That's number one. So we won't. It's the same lawyer who's familiar with the case. I believe that it is the same rate as he was charging with his prior law firm, but I will confirm and bring it back at the next meeting if that is indeed the case. I did not draft the old contract, so I can't tell you that I'm familiar with the terms of that.
Thank you. And next speaker, please.
Frank Cilio, Los Osos. Did you each get a copy of this I passed around regarding what was in the packet from the Board of Supervisors? Did it get passed over? Okay, what I'm passing you by is this was in the packet for the board, the September 29, 2009 Board of Supervisors meeting regarding the Los Osos wastewater project permit. What I found interested in it is that there's a section here that's the coastal plan policy, Chapter 9, Policy 3, monitoring of resource states. In a basin where extractions are approaching groundwater limitations, the county shall require applicants to install monitoring devices and participate in water monitoring management program. I'm going to skip around, but it says that all water well permit applicants within the coastal zone shall be reviewed by the county engineer to determine if participation in a water monitoring program is necessary to ensure records are available for use in the resource management system. The manner in which the permit applicant shall participate in the monitoring program, including the frequency and type of reporting, shall be determined by the county engineer. To date, the county engineer has not determined that a water monitoring program is necessary to assure records are available for use in the resource management system. What I'm bringing up is my disappointment that this is something that's been around for a while. Why wasn't this brought forward? Why haven't we explored utilizing this and encouraged the county maybe to do this? So we would be able to find out about the exact amount of water that's being used, because the district's being monitored. You know how much water you use. Currently, studies have determined what they believe is as much water is being pumped out of the basin. I think this is important because you haven't issued a will serve letter since you become a district for those people who are building who want to hook up to the wastewater or build a home in a prohibition zone. Right now, Golden State can continue to issue will serve letters in the basin, as well as people can build outside who are going to be having wells on their property. I think it's important that you encourage the county maybe to go forward with a program to monitor wells, to apply this, because we're a severity 3. We've already been said that our basin is in danger. So I'd like to see some support in this area for that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The next speaker, please.
Hey, Chris Alby, CDO 1019. Water Board and the county people come out here. We never get any answers. Somebody should be watching them a little closer. And then after all this and all this fooling around we do with the 3 minutes, well, we get a total of 10 minutes here and a total of 4 minutes here, blah, blah, blah. And then we get to listen to about a half hour of lawyer speak from Mr. Olszewski over the paragraph in a letter or something. And I don't remember him being out here when we had about 150 people demonstrating for our 3 minutes a few years ago. One thing I have to say for Mr. Sparks, he took his turn in the barrel, and he's been there. He doesn't like the public speaking, but, you know, he backs it up, and you can't fault him on it. The I don't attend a lot of the community meetings because they're not televised. And generally, they're just meetings that are held to see where the opposition's coming from. And it doesn't get televised, so no one sees it. And I just don't have the time to waste on that. I think everything we do here should be televised. I still haven't gotten an answer on the saltwater intrusion. Here we go again. Nobody's looking into this. You want to know how fast it's coming in, at what rate is the darn stuff getting in here, and at what point are we all going to have to move, or do they have a way of stopping this saltwater intrusion? They didn't even talk about it at the big hoorah. Meeting the day before yesterday. They tiptoed around the whole thing. Never talked about it. These are important things. If they can't stop this, the only other alternative is to move. And then how do they handle that? Is the Corps of Engineers boot us out of here, or do they send out the National Guard? I don't know. Or else we all buy new swimming suits.
Can you finish your comments? Thank you, okay. Mr. Halpig.
I'll have some more later on. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. And so, Ms. Kudart, there's no warning on the. It's 3 minutes. Okay, I'll let people finish. I'll let people finish their thought.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of Los Osos. I concur with Mr. Cilio. It's long overdue that we address the saltwater intrusion and we put a moratorium on any further development, and we get the facts, not the assumptions, but the facts regarding how many wells we have, how much they are pumping, and apparently from what Mr. Meacham said, there is an agreement up in the Paso Robles Basin that private well owners are going to begin to put meters on their wells so that they know how much they are pumping. It's important. We're running out of not only water that is a good quality, but we may be running out of water, period. We're beginning the fourth month from the year that they calculate, and it is that we have had someone who has been in the office practically since the CSD was formed by the name of Karen Vega. We did not know. The public was not told that she no longer is a part of the employees for the CSD. It's very unfortunate. She was a very pleasant person. She was very cooperative. When you asked for information, if she had it, she gave it to you. If she did not have it, she got it for you. It's unfortunate that the transparency of this CSD board has not been as they purported in their original platform when they were elected. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and there's nothing I would comment on that. The CSD is being as transparent as it can be.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker. I see that your next meeting is not until November 5th. That's your next regular meeting, and you don't have any special meetings scheduled as of yet. I'm curious, and the reason I bring that up is that should you want to appeal the County Board of Supervisors project, you would need a meeting before November, probably within the next 20 days or so, to discuss that and bring that to the public. And the reason I think you might be interested in appealing is that the letters that you've sent have really gone on deaf ears. The requests that you've made were not implemented in the final outcome of the project. And I don't think you should give up. I think you should be a party to those requests. Just because it goes to the Coastal Commission doesn't mean that you're still going to get what you want unless you are an appellant and bringing up your issues. And I somewhat object to the way that the CSD submitted their letter piggybacking on appellants and not being an appellant yourself. If you have issues, then bring them up and have the chutzpah to stand there and make your issues known. And I don't believe you did that, and I don't think you were well represented. Something's been bothering me a little bit over the last couple of months about the report we've gotten out of the Vista de Oro and the clay pipe possibly disintegrating there. I think you need a specialist to look at that. The clay pipe that was installed some 30 or so years ago was supposed to have lasted 100 years. Fired, it's like glass inside, and it really shouldn't be coming apart. And if someone has dumped some toxic substance in there that's deteriorated the pipe, then you need to know what the source of that is and get on it and repair, whether it's segments of pipe or maybe the whole system. The county would need to know that the collection system is damaged.
A general public comment, and next, I'd like to welcome Mr. Dan Berman from the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, who's going to give a presentation tonight. And thank you for coming, Dan. And go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Sparks, and members of the board for the opportunity to speak, and fellow residents of Los Osos. My name is Dan Berman. I'm the director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. And let me just tee this up here. I was invited to speak this evening specifically about stormwater pollution, urban runoff, partly in light of the seasonality here. We are entering the fall, and while today was one of those days that makes me really glad that I live in Los Osos, and in this beautiful area and around this beautiful estuary, it's also the time of the year when we're preparing for rain. And rain, unfortunately, means pollution. And that's not inherently true, but it's true because of the changes that we have wrought on the landscape here. And so I wanted to talk about some of the data that the estuary program has collected about stormwater pollution and some of the things that we can all do to try and reduce this significant source of pollution. First, just kind of in the big picture, water quality pollution, when the Clean Water Act was passed 35 years ago or so, was primarily viewed as a problem of sort of factory discharges, big pipes dumping nasty stuff, untreated sewage, or, you know, toxic wastewater from all kinds of chemical factories. We had rivers catching fire. And through the Clean Water Act, we've done an amazing job, really, of turning that back. There are still significant problems with enforcement of the law and compliance with the law around the country, but it has made an enormous difference. Everybody who has a pipe discharging has to get a permit. The permit's overseen by regulatory agencies. It has to meet standards. In doing so, we've uncovered, as we've seen, that we've fixed many of these pollution problems, but we continue to see contaminated water. We have increasingly realized that there is another very significant source of runoff that is sort of the combination of all of these non-point sources, because it's not coming out of a pipe. So, you know, oil that's dripped on the street, waste from our pets, waste from our pesticides and fertilizers that we apply on our lawn, waste that runs off of farm fields. And this is sort of collectively called non-point source pollution or urban runoff or stormwater pollution. I'll stick with stormwater tonight. One of the ways, I'm going to talk about two kinds of data that the estuary program collects specifically here in Morro Bay in Los Osos to measure this. One is first flush monitoring, and the concept here is that with our Mediterranean climate, where it doesn't rain for many months, many pollutants accumulate on the road surface, in our yards, in our storm drains, and with the first big rain of the year, they get flushed into the bay, and it's when we expect to see really the highest concentrations of pollutants. And so we have for a number of years, and it was done in the 90s as well, sort of intermittently. Another thing I'm going to talk about is something we just started the last couple of years called Urban Watch, which is that our storm drains should not be discharging anything during the dry season, right? They're meant to carry rainwater off. In many places here and elsewhere, it's become clear that the storm drain system is picking up water, and whether it's groundwater or whether it's leaks from pipes or whether it's people overwatering their lawn or washing their cars in the summer, we see water running out of storm drains during the dry season. So we started a program we call Urban Watch, where we have volunteers that go to a number of different fixed drains once a week, and really they're just checking to see, is there water flowing out of here? And if so, if there's enough, we make observations. What does it look like? Does it smell bad? And then if there's enough flowing, we take a sample and test that. So I'm going to talk about first flush data and Urban Watch data. Well, that's not very promising. Here we go. So I've covered most of this, collecting urban runoff during the first rainstorm, talking about pollutants of greatest concern. I will say, with the goals of this kind of monitoring, it's really about public awareness and trying to get a handle on what the problems are. It's very difficult to quantify out of this sort of the total loading, for instance, of metals, how many pounds of a certain metal are entering the bay. This is really kind of, it gives us a sense of what's happening out there. But it's difficult to compare from year to year because every storm is different and there's a different amount of dry days before it. So it's sort of taking a snapshot of what's happening out there. Again, more pretty photos or not pretty photos. There's quite a few different sites that have been done. We've really been working to try and identify a core group of sites that we can stick to instead of jumping all around. The Regional Water Board has done it at times. We've done it. We've done it together. Obviously these storm drains in Morro Bay are sort of the most obvious sort of example, but there are areas, as you'll see, in Los Osos. So it was done in 95, 96, and 97, and then it wasn't done, and then a couple years ago we started it up again. We monitor for oil and grease, a number of metals, bacteria, sediments, a couple specific nutrients, the pH level or the acidity of the water, oxygen levels, and then turbidity or just the cloudiness of the water. And it's primarily done by volunteers. And we're very proud of our volunteer monitoring program, and I encourage everyone here who's interested in this and wants us to help keep understanding what's happening with the system. Having volunteers coordinated with a few staff people has been an incredibly cost-effective way for us to track the health of the system here. We can do some of the analysis ourselves, but to do all of those things cost about $200 a sample, so it's not cheap, not terribly expensive. And we've funded that primarily through our funding we get from the Environmental Protection Agency, because Morro Bay is a national estuary. We try and pick sort of representative sites with different kinds of land uses. Our bay is small enough that we can capture most of the sites. I think that's off Baywood Pier there, if it looks familiar. And we try, and there's some sort of tech before it goes down into the drainage system that's been built there. And then we sample at Ravina, just on Los Osos Valley Road, and actually on Bayview Heights, sort of a little below the fire station. It's sort of odd, but if you're familiar with it, the storm water, there is a storm drain system for part of Redfield Woods. It actually comes out onto the street, and goes down the street, and then goes back in again, hopefully. Most of the time it just ponds in the intersection. So one of the interesting things about looking at the data is that there are not really regulatory standards for the stormwater itself. We're testing the stormwater. All the regulatory standards are for the receiving water, the bay or the river that this is flowing into. So it's a little tricky to take a sample of the stormwater and say, oh, this violates the standards. We can say this, this is not acceptable if this was the water in the bay, but it gets much more confused to sort of sample the bay itself because it's actively diluting, and how much do you mix it up. But sampling the stormwater gives us a sense of what we're contributing, what kinds of pollution are coming off of our residential area here. So into some data tables here, bacteria concentrations, the lower series of dots, E. coli, should, in order for water to be considered safe to sort of splash in, have contact with, it should be down close to the 100 line, a little above it. So every sample here that we collected in 2007 was above the standard for E. coli, which is an indicator of fecal coliform from the intestines of warm-blooded animals, basically. It could be people, birds, dogs, mammals. And then the higher number, and you should notice that it's a logarithmic scale there, so it's not going 1, 2, 3, it's going 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000. So those top numbers are essentially sort of off the chart. So we do know that the stormwater, and this is consistent from year to year, the stormwater runoff is very high in bacteria levels, including indicators of fecal bacteria sort of everywhere, essentially. So the guidance. I know these are illegible. The point is that they are respectively nickel, zinc, and copper. There's a red line down near zero across there. That's the regulatory standard for the level of those different metals that's considered to be acceptable, safe in the bay waters. And so the stormwater that's pouring in is, you know, fivefold, sixfold, tenfold greater in concentration of these metals, specifically nickel, copper, and zinc. Some are actually kind of close, but generally we see really high levels of metal in these. And there's different sources for these. One of the common sources for all three is our brake pads, believe it or not. Brake pads are made out of metal. They're designed to grind off. You've got metal rubbing against metal to slow your car down. We do that all through the dry season here, and an invisible layer of metallic dust is created that coats our streets and our gutters, and when it starts raining, that gets swept into the bay. And I would encourage people to jump in with questions as I go here, and I think it'll make a better presentation. Please, George. Guidance from the regional board, levels above that red line are considered to be a concern, mostly because it stimulates algae growth that can then lead to a whole variety of problems. So phosphate levels are high across the board, more so, you guys probably can't read, Baywood Pier, that one that's much taller than the rest is Baywood Pier, the storm drain that drains right at Baywood Pier. And that's actually showing across 3 years. So it is really variable from year to year. Oops, wrong way. And nitrates, interestingly enough for Los Osos, are not that high in stormwater, below the sort of level of concern, far below sort of the drinking water concern. So that's sort of the summary presentation of some of our first flush data. Those data were all from 2007. In 2008, we did all our sampling in Morro Bay and not in Los Osos. We wanted to get a better sense of how much those numbers change through the course of the season. So instead of taking a whole bunch of samples at a bunch of sites just once, we focused on a few sites in Morro Bay and we sampled them a number of times through the rainy season to see how much the levels dropped off. It was interesting. Some analytes dropped down, some went up. A much more detailed write-up with all of these graphics and discussion and more data you can get on our website. I can happy to steer people there. I'm going to switch briefly to the Urban Watch. Again, we've got a number of sites here. Does anyone have a pointer I can use, a laser pointer? If not, nope. I can use the cursor, okay, if it comes out visible. Yeah, they're a little hard to see here. Again, we sample Baywood Pier. So this is, again, this is looking in the dry season. Bayview Heights. This is, I think, at Fairchild Way on Los Osos Valley Road. And then we have a number of sites down down Pine Street. And these are all sort of places where we know there's storm drains that we see water at occasionally, or there's, and they would appear actually a pipe into the bay. Again, if there is water, we test for these things. Our really first check really is just, is water flowing in these things during the dry season when, you know, the obvious question is, where is this coming from? And so this is the percent of the times we visited where there was water flowing. Bayview Heights stands out, and you guys can see this for yourself in the summertime. You actually see water coming out of the storm drain there, running down the hill a little ways, going back in. 90% of our once-a-week visits in 2007, 85% in 2008. I realize these site codes are kind of cryptic to you guys, frankly to me too from here. But again, I encourage you, if you want to see more, the underlying point is that some of these sites have water flowing, visible water in them all through the year, and it's, really each one needs some more homework to figure out, is this just groundwater surfacing? Is this somebody's sprinkler system that's leaking, or somebody's water line leaking all the time? And the same thing is true in Morro Bay. A number of the sites down in the Embarcadero, Rose's Landing is the high point there that's flowing most of the time. And it's really variable. Some sites are almost never flowing water. Only one of the sites, actually Baywood Pier, which surprised me, was, had water frequently but was actually below the standard. That site's a little odd because it's essentially tidal. It gets flooded at high tides. So most of the sites, the water was not considered safe to have contact with in terms of coliform. I'm going fast through this because I don't want to just throw a million data tables at you. Again, I encourage folks who are interested to get the full reports on our website. We have both kind of four-page summaries and then, 30-page more technical reports. Of note, I guess, overall, oil and grease was really rarely detected, which is very positive. I think once or twice over many years we've gotten a hit on those. We think that it binds to the sediments, and so it's kind of harder to detect. You can't detect it at low levels. The metals concentrations are clearly concerning. They're elevated throughout. Overall, they've been really higher in Morro Bay, but high in Los Osos as well. Turbidity and bacteria concentrations are regularly exceeded the recommended standards and slightly more elevated in Los Osos, at least for the first flush, than in Morro Bay. Dissolved oxygen, pH, and nitrate have not really been of concern. And the Urban Watch has really shown us that there's a number of places where stormwater is flowing in the dry season. That's bad for our water supply, which is, of course, a huge problem here. And it's bad for water quality because the water that's flowing is not very clean. And we've been trying to pass that information on. Both this community and the city of Morro Bay are now under sort of formal stormwater management plans with the regional board. One of the early sort of tasks in both those plans is to have a system to detect and deal with what they call illicit discharges, which is essentially what's getting put into the storm drain besides rain. One of the mantras they chant now is only rain down the drain, right? So, this dry season flow suggests that there are things other than rainwater getting into our storm drain systems and getting down to the bay. And what you can do about it, I suspect that almost everyone in this room and hopefully most of the folks listening at home have heard this before, but I think repetition is the key with these things. That's why we see the same advertisements over and over on TV. We need to make the same advertisements for taking care of the bay. We need to limit our use of fertilizers and pesticides, and especially don't ever apply them when there's rain coming. It's just not a good plan. It's going to wash off into the bay, and you're going to be wasting your product anyway. We need to dispose of our chemicals, batteries, oil, in recycling facilities, at the household hazardous waste facility. You can get rid of old paint. You can get rid of almost anything basically for free at the hazardous waste facility in Morro Bay every Saturday in the morning. You can get all this information out of your phone book. We need to pick up after our pets. Bacterial contamination is a real problem in the bay. It's a problem for oyster growers. It's a problem for our human health. And pet waste is a significant component of that. We've worked with a lot of groups in Los Osos and Morro Bay to get these Mutt-Mitt dispensers up. I really encourage people to use them. Take care of your vehicle. Auto leaks are a significant component of poison into the system. And finally, washing your car at car washes or over grass or sand. When you wash your car in your paved driveway, it runs down the road and into the storms. We want every homeowner and resident around here to use them. So please take one. There's many on the back counter. We have more at our office. You can call us. You can email us, write us, and we will send them to you for free. Our website, which is the place to get any contact information, is just our acronym for Morro Bay National Estuary Program. Just search for that, you'll find us. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions from the board or the audience.
Thank you, Dan. And I guess we'll go ahead and let the public ask them some questions. And I guess if you could keep your presentation up in case there's something specific from that. Before we do that, the board, is there any questions? Okay. Go ahead, Director Sennett.
Thanks, Dan. I enjoyed the presentation, and it's always good to be reminded of things that we can do in our own lives to help out the estuary. One of the things I've seen since the 80s when new homes were built was that they were required to have their own the storage or detention for rainwater. And as people re-landscape their homes, they could have modified these. And those are always a good thing to have. So consider putting in a detention pond. That's helpful. Also, the issue of detergents, could you describe the effect on wildlife? I've heard it is very detrimental to the fish.
Yeah, I guess I'm most familiar with some of the literature on the effects of detergents, specifically on salmonids, which for us is our steelhead here, which use the bay and use our creeks. Their steelhead in Los Osos Creek and Choro Creek, greatly reduced from their historic numbers. And detergents, you know, and there's been there was a big kerfuffle, I guess I'll say, about this with the county stormwater plan about whether they should put regulations on people washing their cars. We did some homework at the time, and right around that time there was some excellent peer-reviewed literature coming out of the Northwest Seattle area showing, in fact, that very low levels of these sort of common detergents, car washes, are incredibly detrimental to the eggs and juvenile, especially the larval and juvenile stages of our steelhead trout that live in the creeks here and that are an endangered species. The detergents are really not good for the system. I guess I would emphasize as well that, in addition to the detergents, the sort of garden herbicides and pesticides that are widely available and sort of promoted for use in your garden are generally pretty poisonous, if not to us, then to many other living things. And there's a lot of ways that we can have successful gardening without putting poison in the yard. I mean, that's why we're using it to kill things. And so it follows that it's going to be killing things besides what you're targeting.
And as well, I've heard that pavement surfacing, the slurry seals have a lot of surfactants, detergents in them. That also wash out, but I think that's in the county stormwater plan.
You know, I really don't know. I think that a lot of things are galvanized with zinc, and I know in our stormwater report, which I was reviewing, you know, putting this presentation together, there was some discussion that my staff had found that you know, galvanized products will slowly sort of wear away and lose their coating, either because it wasn't done well or just because it's aging. And so if it's coming from, you know, galvanized flashing in our gutters and around our houses, maybe one source. But I'm not sure if zinc is also a component of sort of the automotive impact, brake pads and other sources from the cars. I guess I would say, too, that, you know, and you really started with this, with detention basins. It's a good place to talk about this concept of low-impact development because, in some ways, in Morro Bay, we have an advantage that we don't have this elaborate system of storm drains to immediately, you know, get rid of all the stormwater by rushing it down to the bay. We have more opportunities here for water to soak into the ground and infiltrate. It's been a while since we've had big floods here, but that's not always appreciated by the folks in the low-lying parts of town, since it also is tied to our flooding problems. But you know, there is a lot of opportunity here for infiltration, and you know, it is the impervious surface that we have put on the landscape in the roads and in our rooftops that really collect these pollutants and help flush them down to the bay. And so the more that we can do to disconnect these things from each other so that our driveways, you know, water coming down our driveway has a chance to soak into the ground, the more we can do to explore things like pervious pavement and pavers in our driveways and in our roads, so that water running down the road has a chance to get into the ground instead of getting straight down to the bay, the more it helps with this problem.
Thank you. Okay, so that we'll go ahead and if there's, and how many people want to ask questions of, so we have, you know, five or six, so come to the podium and go ahead and ask away.
George Taylor, Los Osos. I just wanted to commend Dan on his presentation. It was very comprehensive. Just one thing that was left out of your presentation, and that is that there is a, you mentioned a lot of collection points around the bay and infiltration points. There's one that's a major one at Don and Mitchell in Cuesta by the Sea. And it has a, it's a pump out situation where water collects there and then it's pumped out through an underground culvert that goes out into the Cuesta Marsh and out into the Cuesta arm of Morro Bay. And it gets a lot of water. And I think that it's necessary that that should be one on your list of one that's tested. It's a long, quite a long outfall there between Don and Mitchell and the bay, but it goes through a, I believe, a right-of-way that in between the houses and goes underneath Ramona Avenue and right out. But it's there, and so you might as well just recognize the fact that if you garage your car, you're going to be less polluting than if you let it sit out on the street. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Dan. Frank Asilio, Los Osos. One question. I have two questions. The first one is about have you got together with the Air Resource Board and discussed the type of pollutants that go in the air? Because what goes in the air does eventually come down on the ground. You know, I'm wondering about automobile exhaust, Morro Bay plant, what they put out, and that goes up in the air. And so that might help out to understand, because there's a connection that goes up, it's going to be on the ground, to talk with them and see what pollutants they have identified and see if any of those are being captured by any of your runoff system. The other thing is, I'm not clear on the runoff during the dry season in Los Osos. I mean, I've seen runoffs from people's driveways when they're washing down their driveways or people watering lawns. It's getting in the roadway, flushing, the fire department flushing fire hydrants, things like that. So I'm not sure where the water is running during the dry season. I wasn't clear. Maybe you said it, but I didn't pick up on that.
In terms of the first question, you know, the only source of atmospheric deposition or air deposition of pollutants that we've really done much homework on is from the Morro Bay Power Plant. You know, when they are running full steam, or you know, which is sort of half steam now, but when they're running strong, they put a pretty substantial amount of nitrogen NOx, nitrogen oxides, and, you know, also these very fine particles, PM10 and these micron-level particles. I think those are more of a human health risk for breathing. The nitrogen, you know, it takes really kind of sophisticated modeling, of course, of, you know, how high is the plant and where does the wind blow and how much is coming out to try and look at atmospheric deposition. And so you're right to point to the Air Board. They're the folks we would need to get that. And we did do some of that, I think, in like 2002, 2003, when it looked like they were, you know, in full steam to build a brand new power plant here. You know, one of the things that people liked in Morro Bay was the stacks were going to be shorter. The Air Board didn't like that because there's a reason they make those stacks tall, to get that stuff away from us. My memory at that time was that, you know, the total nitrogen pounds of nitrogen that they thought were actually coming down in the bay and in the watershed was pretty small relative to, you know, for instance, the amount of nitrogen that's coming out of the CMC treatment plant into Chorro Creek and flowing down to the bay directly. I agree that atmospheric deposition can be a really significant source. I know it has been found to be a substantial contributor to nitrogen pollution in other systems, and so I'll take the prompt to look at that. In terms of what we're seeing with the Urban Watch monitoring, it's a little simpler in Morro Bay because it's just like the end of the pipe is something coming out, pouring out into the bay, and where it's coming from we basically don't know. In Los Osos, I personally haven't gone and toured all of the specific sites to see. Baywood Pier, you know, usually looks like there's water coming out of the culvert right there at the end of 2nd Street. I'm never sure how much of that is seawater that went up at high tide and is coming back down now and how much is freshwater. We do test the conductivity, and it's usually kind of mixed, so it gives you the sense. I know that whole area down by 2nd Street has, you know, groundwater is just under the surface there, and whether we're just actually measuring groundwater that's coming out. You know, I didn't talk about it. We've measured flow from these seeps that come out sort of along the 3rd Street between Sweet Springs and Baywood Pier. There's freshwater seeps that are, you know, what we think is just shallow groundwater that's surfacing and flowing out there. And so that may be what we're seeing at Baywood Pier as well. I share your sort of head scratching of why are we seeing water at these places, but we're seeing it.
Thank you. The next speaker, please.
Hi, Lon Perlman. I just got a whole bunch of observations of what I've observed personally on the Los Osos coast. First line was actually Cuesta Inlet, and George seems to know quite a bit more about it. But I would say that one of the features of the inlet itself is there's a lot of sub-inlets, and it doesn't have a good tide exchange. It also has a very large amount of grasses that tend to decompose. And I was there on Clean Beach Day, and Chuck Cecina was there, and he was actually the organizer for that site. And I'd say we didn't find all that much stuff. We didn't pull up a chair that I found in the bushes. There's quite a number of boats that will never... they're actually on land. They're decomposing, and there's been quite a bit of talk about... It's a complicated situation, legal and so on, so that's not as important. But there is the oak grove, I believe, also. Is it sort of a natural bioswale that probably filters the surrounding waters that's probably coming from residences. The CSD has an outlet. It's the one that looks like a mushroom. It's about 100 feet or so south of the pipe. I did observe it last winter. I do understand that the CSD has undergone a certain amount of LID and cleaning and a bioswale at their pump site. But I will say that the water seems to be pumped because irrespective of whether rain was coming down that particular moment or not, I did notice that it sort of jetted out for a few minutes, then it would stop, then it would jet out again in great force, not a very large volume, but it pretty much flew up in the air. And given all that action, there was a very small amount of foaming that I did notice, and that could be alarming to some, but it dissipated very quickly. It was very thin, and pretty much any time you mix even natural oils or other chemicals, it was amazingly clean given that it was really shaken up like a milkshake. So that's just an observation there. Traveling to it more efficiently, and I would actually recommend that being at the Palisades, a possible... it will be a large storm drain, a possible collection point, and I will also point out that there really isn't a bioswale planned at the end terminus. Thank you.
Thank you for helping with Creekdale on. I think you're right. Cuesta Inlet would be a good place to check, and I appreciate the input on other places to look. I think our sampling, we sample actually at the 8th Street pump station sort of from the water as it's going into the pump station, and our intent is to be capturing that because we know that is what's discharged out of that standpipe. I believe the CSD has a distinct permit for that discharge from the regional board, and so they are required to monitor it and track the effluent, and they, I know they did recently complete a project to enhance the level of treatment that water gets because we helped a little bit with a small grant with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Chris Alvey, CDO 1019. Referring to Rose's Landing, you're talking about some odd readings or whatever you get there. I don't remember how far that is from the bait dock, but you've got the bait dock and you have a couple of pilings forming cubby holes back underneath these buildings and stuff, and you can reach a point where some dead bait stuff gets in there, and it'll twirl one way when the tide goes in, twirl again when it goes out, but it never disappears. The only other thing, does your department monitor saltwater incursions? Is that part of your job?
No, we're not looking at any kind of ourselves. We're just collecting surface water samples.
Okay.
Thank you. Any more questions from the public?
Julie Tacker. Thank you, Dan, for coming. I had a difficult time finding out what Mr. Berman's presentation was going to be about. Your agenda is not specific, and when I asked your general manager, he failed to respond adequately. So I came prepared with other questions, and while I think your presentation is important, I think some of my concerns are also. And so forgive me if they're a little off topic. A few months ago, Director Kelly said that she was going to contact you to kind of give us all a refresher on the $100,000 grant for our low-income assistance fund. And maybe not now, but in the future, I would like the community to be reminded why those monies were given and what your intent for them was to be. I wanted to talk about your work representing the National Estuary Program. We all know the NEP supported the Tri-W project, and at the time that made sense because the fastest way to a project, whether you were there to support the Tonini project. This past Tuesday, you were in the room and you remained silent on any project. And I think your concerns for the Jacquemazzi project are valid. They need to be raised, that there are environmental concerns. And then if you think a pond is mitigation for those concerns, you should say so. I just have seen some inconsistencies with your representation, and I hope that can be sort of cleaned up. We didn't get to comment on the presentation to Mission Country Disposal, and I think with the stormwater and the filth, I think that's appropriate that they be commended. I'd appreciate, I would like to specifically thank them.
Can you
for
finish
their,
your...
Exactly. Thanks. In conclusion, I would like to specifically thank them for their free pickup of waste at the Sweet Springs Nature Preserve.
Yes. That's appreciated. And I think it's definitely questions departing from your presentation. If you care to make a comment, that's fine.
I'm happy to make a comment, Chairman Sparks. On the first point, thank you for bringing up the contribution that the Estuary Program made to the Los Osos Low Income Assistance Fund. We made that in 2005 when it looked like that the ground was being broken. It looked like the sewer was going to happen. We were trying in part to spur other donors, which we were somewhat successful at. I think about another $25,000 or $30,000 was contributed in, you know, sort of concurrently with the money we put in. That was a fund that, as I understand it, the CSD board itself established. The money is physically held and managed by the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation, our correspondence with them has been that there is a clear intent for the money. It's to be for the fund, the overall fund, including our contribution to it. It's to be used to assist in the, I think specifically the hookup costs for low-income residents. I think how that test is to be applied of exactly who's eligible and how do you decide who to give the money to remains basically to be resolved after the recall election when everything sort of became very uncertain. We, you know, were in correspondence with them just to clarify, you know, this was our intent with the money, this is our understanding and they confirmed, yeah, that's our understanding too. And I think eventually my understanding is really that it's in the hands of the CSD board, probably with the Community Foundation, to propose specific, you know, detailed guidelines of how that money is going to get doled out. Obviously, the need is vastly greater than the amount of funds available, you know, the upfront costs, you know, of connecting for people, there's some homeowner-borne costs upfront of dealing with your septic tank and such, and my understanding is the intent of the fund was to help with some of those immediate sort of cash demand upfront costs, but I think really, you know, people should go back to the original record from the CSD when they created the fund and look there for the specific intent. Never been convinced that many of the things that people have, you know, argued so vehemently about this kind of collection system or this site are really, you know, make or break. Either one of these can work. Either the Giacomazzi site or the Tanini site could work from my perspective. They both have challenges that need to be adequately addressed. At the Giacomazzi site, you are close to Warden Lake. That needs to be, you know, seriously dealt with, and I have pretty good faith with the regulatory agencies and the Coastal Commission that the protections that will be put in place to protect that are going to be effective. You know, there was similar problems at the Tanini site. There, there's a lot of trade-offs in this. There's no way to do this without having a lot of impacts and creating new risks, but the estuary program's position has been throughout to support the wastewater project that the community, whether it was the CSD or the county, through a public process and with the regulatory agencies has brought forward to solve this problem. And so we have not wanted to jump up and down and say, oh, no, we don't like that site. We'd rather have it here. We support the process, including all of the public comment and all of the dissent and concern. You know, it's in its own way heartening to be at the Board of Supervisors meeting and see everybody there, I would say, you know, many of whom have very different, strongly held opinions about exactly how we should do this, but I think the entire community at this point, you know, with very few exceptions, is in agreement that this is an important thing we need to do to protect our groundwater and to protect our bay and to protect our drinking water. And so the estuary program supports solving this problem. We support a public community process to do it. We think that's happened a number of times so far. We're getting close again. We really hope that it gets done as soon as possible.
Thank you, Dan. Okay, so one more set of questions, Mr. Markson.
Thank you, Dan, for coming. The presentation was very interesting. I have a question. There was a chart that you put up that had percentages of how many times you experienced flow out of different sites. You know, some were 90 and some were zero. Does the report go into depth as far as, or do you monitor the amount of flow that's coming out of those pipes as far as if it's just a trickle or if it's steady stream or that? And does the report say that? Talk about that.
I know if we go back to the raw data sheets, we make an observation of that. I have the detailed reports in here. I would have to look. I think we make some sort of general statements about, you know, this site was flowing, you know, at significant volume, or this site was sort of just barely wet. You can tell to some extent there's a number of times when we say, well, it's wet, but there wasn't even enough water to, you know, to fill up a little bottle to test it. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of one level of screening. So, you know, buried in the data sheets are that level of information. I would have to look to see how detailed it gets in the report. I mean, I think in general, most of these, if they're flowing, it's sort of, you know, very low.
And if you experience, if you do experience heavy flow and you find the source, do you make recommendations to the source of the flow as to how to, you know, stop it or...
A flow and some guy was washing his car right next door. If we see something that's really obviously like there's an active, you know, pollution event happening, we try and call, you know, typically it's in Morro Bay because that's where our office is, call the city, send them around to go look. That's happened a number of times. A lot of times it's construction site runoff in the rainy season. We've seen some really muddy water coming out and go upstream, and it's some, you know, bare earth is exposed and the controls either aren't in place or weren't adequate. So we do try and pass that on. We do definitely share all of this data, you know, in a pretty proactive way with the regional board and with, you know, the Morro Bay stormwater people, CSD utilities people. When these reports are done, we're here, this is what we're seeing and where and what we think, you know, needs to be done about it. So we are doing our best to make sure that this information is getting to the, you know, both the regulatory agencies and the responsible parties. I guess I'll clarify. I think most of you know we're essentially a nonprofit. We don't have any regulatory power to make anyone do anything. We have, you know, financial resources to do this kind of monitoring and spend time following it up, and so that's what we're trying to do the best we can at.
Thank you, Dan. We'll close the public questions and comments on the presentation. Once again, Dan, I want to thank you. I really appreciate you coming. It's very timely with the rainy season. We hope rainy season coming up. If possible, we'd like to get the presentation, if we could get it to Margaret, and if you don't mind, have it posted on our website. It's good for people to know, again, with the rainy season coming up. It's very germane. And I'd just personally like to thank you for your and the National Estuary Program's consistent support for the health of the estuary in all facets. I think Director Kelly may have a
question. Thanks for coming, Dan. It's really good to see you. I want to remind people that the Bayside Living Guide, if you're here tonight, please pick one up. But if you don't pick one up this evening, the CSD office does have them as well and is happy to give them to property owners. It really is a very well-written resource, and I appreciate everybody's efforts and support. Thank you.
I'd like to, although he's not here, thank Chuck Sasania as well, who, you know, the CSD is one of the local groups that's represented on our executive committee, which is sort of our, you know, the board that I answer to, our policy committee, along with City of Morro Bay, county, a number of stakeholder groups, and Chuck has been serving in that capacity for a number of years very ably, and I appreciate his attendance and, in general, the CSD's, you know, active participation and interest in the estuary program. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dan. And with that, we're going to go on to the next item. Before we do that, I'm going to need to take a short break. So we'll do it less than 5 minutes, about 8:35. We'll resume. Thanks. Waiting. We have the CAL FIRE open house Saturday in the Vons parking lot from 11 to 2, concurrent with director's office hours, and the county will have the county fire safety house, Freddy fire truck, Smokey the Bear, and Sparky the fire dog. October 10th, Saturday, October 10th. And then the same weekend, the fundraiser for the food banks. All right, we're ready to go. So now we're going to have administrative and committee reports. The first one is the District CAL FIRE manager report, and I think we're going to give it, Ms. Mitch, are you going to go ahead and give that tonight? Okay, so we fire chief is in training. That's good. And the next item, so we have a written report, and the next item is the District Utilities Department report. Ms. Faulkner.
Well, production for the month of August represents an increase of 3.66% from the same time last year. And the billing period for this report was from July 11th through September 10th, and it's a 43% of our service area. And the total consumption during this time was $21,167,500, and it's an increase of 1.3% from last year's total of $20,894,700. But the revenues generated for this period totaled $128,441.19. As far as the California Department of Public Health monthly compliances, we went ahead and reported for August with no problems or violations noted. Our South Bay Upper Aquifer well, we're still working on that. We're pumping the lower aquifer and testing. And the district engineers are working on programming communications between the lower well and the alarm system. As far as water conservation, the September meeting was canceled due to scheduling conflicts. And the utilities operations for Bay Ridge and Vista de Oro, we do have a WEMCO pump that's going to be replaced, a full pump and motor. And right now it's about two more weeks out is what last I heard. And the total cost of this for installation and replacement has come to $10,947. So also the drainage, we have FRM who has awarded the contract to upgrade the 8th Street drainage station. So I encourage any of the directors to ask any questions and let me know.
Director Sennett.
Yes, I was wondering if we are going to have a more comprehensive look at the collection system, and characterize the fragments of clay pipe, just to make sure we don't have a problem. Might lead to a sinkhole or something, pretty serious, and at least determine where that's coming from. Just a suggestion that we might look into that and
sure.
Give it a serious look. While we're looking at the treatment system end of it, we look at the collection system just as a precaution to prevent, a more serious problem.
Well, I'll talk to the crew leader and see what we can do.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
And again, Ms. Faulkner, I want to thank you for the how we've gotten to these graphical charts. We ended up reconciling where it looks normal on the fiscal year 8-9 with the well production and the water use. And these are great. They illustrate what's happened since we did the rate increase. Booth at the Oktoberfest on the 25th. Is that correct? Okay. Thanks.
This is the administrative staff's September report. My name is Sandy Woods. I'm the administrative supervisor. And I'm just going to, I don't think everyone was here, so I'm going to announce again that office hours are going to be October 10th in the Vons parking lot from 11 to 2 instead of at the LOCSD offices. The billing software, which I handle the majority of the time, even though it is for the utility department, is undergoing a major upgrade. We inherited from San Luis Obispo County in 1999. It's never had a major upgrade. It became obsolete as far as technical support, and we could not get a lot of reports out of it that we need for the water rate study and other items. We started this upgrade this week. It'll conclude on Friday, and I have to say I am really excited with what I'm seeing about what we're going to be able to get from the software. And then I also want to mention that Battalion Chief Phil Veneris decided to pursue the change out that we did at the LOCSD of the ballast. We did it in August, and so we're waiting to see the savings as far as the utility bills go. And the fire department completed it a couple weeks ago. They used the same company that we used in August, and it's totally funded by PG&E under their public purpose programs. I, as administrative supervisor, will be attending the annual CalPERS Educational Forum. It's October 26th to the 28th. It's in San Jose, California. CalPERS Educational Forum is basically a three-day conference. It offers 41 workshops, 19 informational booths. This year is going to be very important for attendance because they are updating their whole CalPERS software system. They're combining 19 different programs that currently are on the website that we use for retirement and health insurance into one, and it's going to be called My CalPERS System, and this is happening in April 2010. At the forum, they will provide an interactive room where I can learn and kind of get hands-on and demonstrate and play with the new system. I'll also be meeting with our actuarial and reportable compensation staff and network with other employers and representatives throughout California. And that concludes my report for September. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome.
And next is our general manager's report, Mr. Cooney.
As part of the ISJ, there is a proposed major upgrade to the intertie system between Golden State Water and the district. And due to the leadership of Margaret Faulkner and Travis Tutt, our districts are still trying to get their 2007 audits finished. We're just about ready with ours here. So that should be coming very closely first part of the year. So they're going to be doing their in-office work, and then that draft audit will be presented to the board. The district's having a yard sale, as you know. We declared a lot of surplus inventory, and we're advertising it. We put an ad in the paper. Anybody need any office equipment? We have a considerable amount of that. And also we have four vehicles that we are advertising on Craigslist and in other places to eliminate those. Subcommittee on Emergency Services Advisory Committee concerning strategic business planning for the emergency services for the district will have their first meeting on Tuesday, October 13th at 5 o'clock at the fire station. This is an open public meeting, and Leon Golden has been appointed as chair by Director Ohilski, who is the member of the district representative that chairs the emergency services subcommittee. The other items, the subcommittee on water rates will meet tomorrow. Hopefully we will be pretty close to recommending the future water rates. That's chaired by Dominic Rogue, and has Richard Markinson and Chuck Sneed as the members of that committee. It's been a very active, and I think we're going to come up with a fairly good proposal for the district for the next couple of years. The rate securitization will be is on the agenda for this evening, and that's basically where the League of California Cities and the California State Association of Counties have come together with a bond plan in order to backfill our money that's going to be taken away from us as far as the Proposition 1A taxes are concerned. And that concludes my report.
Any questions from the board members? Director Senna?
I know we're going to talk about it later, or at least it's one of our one of our items of discussion, and that's the appeal for hardship.
Yes.
Is that very possible?
Well, I think as far as the hardship goes, that is AB 15, and there are no guidelines for that. But it's due by October 15th. If SB 67, which is the securitization, goes through, then there are no hardships. That's the but SB 67 has not passed yet, so we want to cover ourselves as far as the hardship exemption goes and get our application on file by October 15th.
Yeah, Mr. Seitz, I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to back up what Mitch has just said. The consent calendar has applications for both the hardship exemption in the event that AB 67 isn't signed by the governor, and then if AB 67...
Mr. Seitz,
thank you.
Would you mind if, when we get to consent, I'll just ask for a brief clarification?
Resource Water Conservation District Advisory Committee. I think we went over it quite a bit at the previous meeting, and these are just the highlights of the next steps. Some of the interesting comments is regarding Nacio Menos at 17%. There was some interesting discussion about the Public Policy Institute of California, and there's a study called California 2025, Taking on the Future. I went back and looked at that website, and it's really interesting. Some of it's way above and beyond me. I'd have to go back several times, but that was interesting. Some ongoing updates regarding Integrated Water Regional Management Plan, the Paso Groundwater Basin Resource Capacity Study. Those agencies up there are working together and will be going to the Board of Supervisors regarding a cost sharing, and have FUGRO begin some work. And what they're doing is developing some baseline data on water use in that basin. And the other interesting development there is that the Wine Association will be participating in that study and be sharing well use, which is used typically confidential and private, but they are wanting to resolve some of the issues up there in the Paso Groundwater Basin. So that was a real positive outcome. Lots of discussion on the Water Master Plan, discussing the methodology. There is a planning workshop on October 7th with the RAC and the public. It starts at 9 a.m. at the SLO Library. This does not preclude the already scheduled RAC meeting for the afternoon, but there is going to be a more intensive study session, planning session on the countywide water master plan. So anyone interested in those issues are encouraged to participate. Some of the discussion more typically is going to have to do with, it sounds to me as though there's going to be quite a bit of discussion on the Lopez Dam and the spillway and who's getting what and how many people need more. Some discussion, I think we finalized our discussion and comments on the conservation open space element that's in front of the Planning Commission. So there wasn't anything of particular outstanding noteworthiness. So that's my update on that. I do have the Water Rate Subcommittee report that came to the Water Advisory Committee, and I have copies for you and copies for the public. I did not get this in time to get it submitted in the packet, but I would like you to have it if anybody from the public would like a copy. It's really important that we track what the subcommittee is doing right now, and I'm trying to report to you on a regular basis so that nothing comes as a big surprise, that we're staying apprised of what this subcommittee really has been tasked with and what they are doing. It's a substantial amount of work, and it's really important that this board and the public be aware as much as possible. This is the third report out of the subcommittee. And so please, if you have any questions, come to the Water Advisory Committee. That's our next one. October... and present to us. And I've requested that Dominic Rock, who is chairing this committee, be present and on hand if you have any questions about how they came to these. And Dominic's working very closely with Margaret and Mitch and the rest of the committee on this. So it'll be really so. Please just be aware that it is coming, and that there has been a lot of work gone into it. So that's my report.
Thank you.
Not that I want to give John any more chance to talk, but I think that one thing we need to put in here is that we will need our legal counsel to give us some 218 advice.
At the time when the staff does give the presentation, or prior.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Marshall's not here on the Emergency Services Committee. Just a reminder, there's a joint Emergency Service and LOCAC meeting on October 15th at the South Bay Fire Station at 5:30, and Emergency Services Strategic That's a strategic planning subcommittee. And then it doesn't. When do we have the next emergency services committee meeting? Do you know that, Mitch? What day that would be?
It's on the 13th.
Okay, this says subcommittee, so that's a regular meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. I think it's the 15th, the joint one.
It's the joint meeting. Okay, so that is the 15th. There's not a separate meeting. Okay, great. Again, that's October 15th at 5:30. And then next we have the Finance Advisory Committee meeting. We didn't meet for 2 months. We haven't really had a lot going on. We didn't want to leave a third month, so the meeting was mostly status. I was unable to attend. I want to thank Director Sennett for chairing that and giving the status and I don't think we needed a written report, but if you could give a oral report. We're on the Finance Committee, right?
Yes, I'm pleased to say that we met on September 21st, and there were three things on the agenda, but unfortunately, they were probably premature. The audit hadn't been initiated yet. It was just getting arranged. The financials weren't prepared, so we couldn't discuss them.
You need some louder.
Yeah, my mic's on. How's that? Okay, yes, we met on September 21st, and three things were on the agenda, the update of financials, the audit, and the status of the water rate study by the Water Advisory Subcommittee. But unfortunately, two of the items were not really ready for presentation because the audit hadn't begun yet. As you've heard, the general manager report that they're leaving, I guess, tomorrow, and that they would go prepare the report. But there was nothing to really discuss, and the financials hadn't been prepared adequately to really comment or discuss. So the only thing we had was public comment and a presentation by Richard Margetson of the water rate study.
In providing information, comments to the county, all the appellants and their interest, and the county and county staff for that for their time and for their interest and for their comments into the project. And as I said at the meeting, we had appellants that are within this district we represent, and appellants, even though they're not in this district, they are all part of the Los Osos community, and I appreciate all their concerns. Again, as the Planning Commission, I think, has struggled, and we provided language on conditions 97 and 103. The county ended up taking some of our format in the end, not... we had to get the specific language we wanted to on limitations for environmental use, with the county, you know, wanting to heed to the conditions as brought forth on those from the Planning Commission. So report that. And I think that's all the director reports. So with that, are there any... the next item is going to be, are any directors going to want to pull any items from the consent calendar? These are A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H. And again, the special notice was sent out on the item 5F on the Proposition 1A securitization program. Added to the filing for the hardship was also the getting the receivable and bond issue, which I'll ask Mr. Seitz to provide that clarification since the additional item was sent out, notice was sent out yesterday. But are there any items that any directors want to pull? Okay, there are none. So again, Mr. Seitz, briefly on item 5F, can you provide some clarification since we added that item at the, yesterday?
Yeah, I just wanted to back up what Mitch had said, is that what you have on your consent agenda is the application for both the hardship exemption in the event AB 67 isn't passed and the appropriate resolution to apply under AB 67 if AB 67 is signed by the governor. So it just offers you both programs.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. And with that, we'll go ahead and take public comment on administrative and committee reports and on the consent calendar items A through H.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. My first question was to Margaret's report about the South Bay well and the pumping that's going on. It's my understanding that that would be non-potable water, and where is that going in the interim until that blending station is working properly? My next question is the yard sale. I read in the staff report that items valued under $100 were going to be given to Mission Country Disposal. And if that's the case...
If there's no bid on them or
if nobody
okay. wants them, yes.
Okay. Yeah. If that's the case, I would much prefer maybe the Achievement House, maybe someone who's not following Ms. Kelly asked that the RAC also review those reports. I did not find, let me stay on the RAC. Last meeting, we did discuss the prior RAC meeting. Last meeting of the Los Osos CSD, we did speak to the last RAC meeting, and here tonight we have a written report. And I was rather chastised by Ms. Kelly by the way I reported what I saw happen at that meeting with regard to consideration of reconvening the subcommittee for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. And she wasn't there, so her report is kind of vague. But I did ask, actually someone asked on my behalf, Mr. Wynn, if he had been contacted by Ms. Kelly in her, even her discussion about whether or not the subcommittee should reconvene, and he said he was not, and he was on the subcommittee. There is no Water Advisory Committee report in the packet, and I believe you met last week, a week ago, Wednesday, I think it was, Wednesday or Thursday, and I wasn't sure if you were able to discuss tasks 1 and 2 or 1 or 2 because I thought I saw a typo in the agenda and that would preclude you from discussing.
Thank you. Thanks. For your comments. Next speaker, please. And just, you know, I'll just say briefly on the task 3, those tasks are getting clarified, and I don't believe they will be done by the end of the year, but probably early next year is a reasonable time frame. Okay. Mr. Casilio.
Frank Casilio, Los Osos. First, I'd like to I'm glad to hear from Mr. Cooney about the Cleese and Harrison report being peer reviewed, because there was concern that that wasn't a document to actually utilize just yet until it was reviewed. Hopefully, that the public will have some time to have input to that peer review sometime in a draft report, because the public does have a lot of information in this community about this water, the water basin here. Also, I'd like to talk about what the water ops decided that they wouldn't recommend at this time, a building moratorium, because Golden State is part of the ISJ. Golden State's the only one issuing will sort serve letters. Of course, the people who have property that can place a well on, they can build their property. I disagree with the Water Ops board on that, because to level the playing field, you have many vacant lots in your district that cannot build at this time and may not be able to build later on, because according to the document, one page I gave all of you, Mr. Seitz, too, it does talk about that there will be no authorized additional development until a secure water source is found. This is in response to the appellant. They had all the issues. I think there's 28 pages that was total in the report to the super. So I hopefully that you will support something like that. You will look into it carefully and protect those people that do have property here in the prohibition zone, so eventually they can also be able to build too. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please. If any comments would have to be on the consent calendar items A through H and or the administrative and committee reports. Okay, thank you.
Richard Margetson. This has nothing to do with Margaret, but there was a comment made about the new charts that are in the Water Ops Committee reports are very helpful. I think you need an additional one. I keep bringing up this problem. I think you need one from, it doesn't have to go back into history, but starting now and into the future, one that overlays the water production with the water consumption on a monthly basis, designating the line for each. Because still, for 2008, 2009, there's a five-month period where water consumption is 125 million gallons and production for that same period is 103 million gallons. And even if you add a month on either side of that, you're still short a substantial amount of water. There was something happened last year, coincides with the revenue variations in the revenue chart. I hope the new software and the new tracking will maybe alleviate this in the future. But that's, and my only concern about this is these numbers and these totals are being used by the county to size and figure out flows for the project, and they're inaccurate. I had another comment about something. I know what it was. The vehicle for the fire station, Phil's new vehicle. Is this cost fully outfitted, or is this just the cost of the vehicle, and then Cal Fire will do what they need to it to make it, you know, a fire response vehicle? That was my question. And do we have a cost of what that would be?
That is item 6A on the agenda. Do you want me to answer that now, or?
Isn't it on consent?
No.
No, yeah, the bid on the Ford is a general action item.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Save that. I always, more data we can get, and again, I understand Mr. Markinson's concern on the production data, and I think fortunately, though, on the consumption data, which is more of what the county looks at in terms of the wastewater sizing, that data, for lack of a better word, doesn't have the problem that the production spike we saw this year. So, again, thanks for providing that. Those, Ms. Faulkner, because it leave the administrative and committee reports.
I'll second.
Oh, I was going to do two motions, but and I'll like to amend my motion and to approve consent calendar items 5A through 5H, including 5F as amended.
I still second it.
Ms. Cooter.
President Sparks?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yep.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, now we have General Action Item A, which is to authorize staff to accept a bid from Perry Ford to replace the South Bay Fire Department Chief Officer vehicle. And so, Mr. Cooney, if you could give...
At your last meeting on September 3rd, you approved the specifications for the vehicle. There is $40,000 that is budgeted for this vehicle. And to answer Mr. Margetson's question, we, instead of having the vehicle purchased completely outfitted, we broke it down into segments, and the other segments will come back to the board at a different date. The reason for that is it's more economical, so we'll be saving a few dollars by doing it piecemeal rather than going out and getting the whole thing completed. The one thing that Mr. Chairman, you need to do, or Mr. President, you need to do this evening is ask if there's anyone here, any of the bidders here, that want to comment on the bid or object to the awarding of the bid as recommended to Perry Ford. All the individuals who submitted bids in a timely manner have been notified of tonight's meeting.
Do we have any bidders here on item A?
Okay, then the recommendation is that we accept the lowest bid from Perry Ford, and that's a 2010 Ford Explorer four-wheel drive for in the sum of $26,864.40. That's, I don't know if it's in here somewhere, but in talking to Chief Veneris, it's something like $40 or $60 difference than the one we bought 4 years ago. So it's got a good price on it.
Any questions from the board? Director Sennett?
Did they talk you into buying the undercoating?
The pardon?
Did they talk us into buying the undercoating protecting? Yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't in the bid, so you approved the bid specifications. So.
Okay. With that, we'll go ahead and take comments from the public. Anyone wishing to comment on General Action Item A? And this is, again, to authorize staff to accept the bid from Perry Ford.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. Just finishing up what I started here earlier this evening. Having never received an answer from anybody, how they're...
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to authorize staff to accept the lowest bid received from Perry Ford to replace the South Bay Fire Department Chief Officer vehicle.
I'll second that motion.
Ms. Kudart.
President Sparks?
Yes.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, this is agenda item 6B, and this is the consideration sponsorship of a gray water comprehensive workshop. I guess, Ms. Faulkner, are you going to give the staff report for this, or Mr. Cooney, do you want to do the honors?
Okay.
Want to arm wrestle for
this
it?
This is one of our partners in our water conservation, and the request this evening is that the board authorize a sponsorship in an amount not to exceed $1,200 from Fund 100 General Ledger Account 7324 Education for the distribution of the information concerning the gray water. That's short and sweet enough.
And, okay.
You went to lunch.
Any directors have questions? Director Kelly.
I was the director that participated in this event. It was very well attended. It was very well done. I have been in contact with the coordinator who's organizing these, Jessica, and I have some very specific questions that they're anxious to get us to partner with Morro Bay, which may or may not work for us, but it's in November 3rd and November 10th, which I think is a little bit too quick. for us to do this, in that there are still some really specific questions unique to Los Osos that have not, that I think could be fine-tuned for Los Osos. I think a lot of people are familiar with gray water. I think the permitting process has become simpler. In fact, I think the more applicable gray water system to Los Osos would be the simple system, which is doesn't require a permit at all. But there are some specific lot size questions that I have that have not been totally answered yet. A lot of the specifications that they have in their manual are lots 50 by 100 feet, a minimum lot size. And they take into calculation specific plants that would need to be planted to keep the gray water on your own property to be either, you know, be utilized in your root zone and uptake by your plants or percolated on your soil, on your property. I have some further questions regarding the simple systems that we could utilize off of our washing machines on our 25-foot by 100-foot lots, as well as our 50 by 100-foot lots with our very narrow setbacks. Setbacks are fine. There's a zero setback, I believe, now under the California code between your own house and the simple system from your washing machine. But there's still some questions I have based on the very narrow lot lines that we have between our houses, how that may look specifically for Los Osos. So I would like to see us support this, the more simple version. I don't think as a district we should be paying for a band or beer or pizza. I think it needs to be really top, just either a mulch or some sort of buffer so that this your laundry detergent is not surfacing, which we see happening quite a bit, and it is a danger to animals, children, and just there's some problems with how we're doing. Los Osos does this already, but we don't do it properly in certain areas. So I would like to have us support this as a board, but I would like it to really be tailored fit to Los Osos and have it answer some real specific questions. One of the questions that came up that still isn't totally clear is the conversion of our septic tanks to either rainwater cisterns or even possibly surge pumps, which may or may not even be surge containers where we would pump out of them. But anyway, so those are some of the questions that I still have that I would like to have developed and presentable for us. So that's my report. Overall, really good. There's just some different questions I have in regards to our community.
Can I ask a question? Are you suggesting that we table this until, or are you suggesting that we approve the funded request?
I'm suggesting we table it until we have until there's a presentation that I think is most beneficial. I don't think we're ready to partner with Morro Bay. They want an answer by tomorrow on whether or not we want to split the cost, but they're doing the full band pizza beer event at the Vets Hall, and I'm just not confident that that's going to be a draw from Los Osos. That's not going to be our thing right now. You know, I just don't think the district should spend that kind of money on that.
Director Kelly, I just wanted to clarify, because it's a little bit confusing. It's a sponsorship, and at first I thought they're holding a workshop, we're going to sponsor it, but this is really to a fee for them to come to one of our meetings and make the presentation?
Correct. My understanding is they wouldn't even, I think maybe coming to our meeting may be a little more helpful because it would be televised, but this is a fee for them to come present this. I mean, there'd be, if we were going to host it, this would be what we would pay them, and we would have additional costs beyond that for the facility and television. So like I said, I still have some questions, and I was hoping Chuck was going to be here to talk about it because he and I were more interested in this. But.
And the other item was, again, there was a response requested by October 16th, and if we're paying a fee for them to have a presentation, I'm not sure then why the deadline was so important.
I don't know.
My thought is this is something, you know, we have a joint, I think we're scheduled for a joint LOCAC meeting in January, and so maybe we could use that as an opportunity. We sponsor it and have the joint meeting and let them do the presentation in a joint meeting maybe in January. Maybe that would be a good way for Los Osos to have it facilitated, and
I think
one of my thoughts would be where we'd want to go. So, and it depends on what the band is. I'd obviously love to have the band and the pizza, but you know, we have to think of the cost. So, Director Sennett.
I think January would be a great thing. And one of the other things I would like to have is maybe even a list of people who people could contact to evaluate their property. You know, can you come and evaluate whether part of the presentation was the new state, the California, they have an emergency guideline that they're going to formalize. I believe it was January 1st, 2011 or 2010 or there. I don't recall the date. And I apologize. I don't have it with it's in the car. Written down, but what they've done is break it out more like Arizona and New Mexico, where you have these simple systems that don't really require, there's BMPs, but there's no real specificity of, you know, how to do a simple system, which I think would be more applicable for Los Osos. So does that answer your question at all? The county guidelines, not...
Maybe I'll show you the guidelines they gave me. They specified plant application rates and things like that.
That's kind of what the gray water manual is that they're talking about that they would bring as part of their...
But the county already had that.
This one's more comprehensive for the... This is really comprehensive that you could build one yourself.
They gave guidelines for the homeowner to produce a system, and I'm wondering if they've updated them.
No, they haven't. That's what, part of what the discussion was. It wasn't enough. The gray water manual that this organization was more comprehensive. And I mean, part of what the county is working on through the conservation open space element is develop and to commit towards developing more information about gray water, but a lot, it's happening in a different pace.
And if I can interject, I think it's all the more reason why this would be appropriate with a joint LOCAC meeting, because that's county-based, and if we could get a county representative as well, the more I think about it, I like going that route. Director Sennett.
Well, also, did the county comment or present anything, and I'd be interested in hearing what they had to say at this meeting, if they were there?
It was different than some of the other workshops that the coalition has done in that they had there were a lot of cities and special districts represented, Paso, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach. So there were more decision makers. And the county participated as a guest. Mark Hutchinson and John Diodati were the participants. So it was environmental planning as well as a couple folks from public health. And one of the drivers behind it was Supervisor Patterson, as far as getting this organized and getting the information out to water purveyors. Golden State was there, you know, so it was really going to utilities and water purveyors and just quote-unquote policymakers and decision-makers. But Supervisor Patterson was one of the drivers behind getting this organized and going. So, but the county was there as participants.
Did the county verify that you didn't need any inspection or a permit to put these systems in?
On the simple systems, you do not need an inspection or a permit. And a simple system was specified as, let's see if I can recall this without it in front of me, a washing machine, basically, was about as simple as you could go, and a 5-bedroom home or smaller. So there was was it, in the guide, it was, I think it was 4 or 5.
Not a laundromat.
No. Yeah, they specified it was like it based it on bedroom size.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to, I think we're kind of January with this workshop. So,
hi. Thank you, Director Sparks. My name is Al Barrell, Coalition for Low Income Housing. Many people have been doing gray water systems for years without a permit, even though a permit was required. Permit's only required if you have more than 2 houses on a lot. So if you have less than 2 houses or 2 houses or less, you don't need to seek a permit. The third thing is that all of the work that Slow Green Build did is on their website, including their... So if you go to slowgreenbuild.org, you can see their manual, which is pretty easy. But SB 2810 approved that. No, we don't have to have permits So the majority of the residents in Los Osos can go ahead and use a gray water as they see fit. I personally like to aerate the gray water because that takes the biological oxygen demand out. And a lot of people are using underground or some storage, like 300 gallons. I have a friend who has a house, and he uses a 300-gallon container from Farm Supply, puts the water in there, and he noticed an odor because he plumbed it to his toilets to reuse. So if you put a little aerator in there, it only operates for 20 minutes a day, you can reduce the oxygen demand to where it's not an impact. But if you use a gray water and plumb it towards trees, and they use a large amount of water, maybe 50 to 100 gallons for an average tree size, you can actually use most of the gray water for beneficial reuse for keeping your trees and shrubs alive so that you don't have to put drinking water on your trees and shrubs. So I think this is a personal issue. I don't think it's a CSD issue. And I think Greenbuild has put so much information out there that I don't see why this is on the agenda. I don't see why you're actually concerned with it, because it's not one of your, you're not tasked to do anything about gray water. And if people want to do gray water, they have all the available information on Slo Greenbuild website. They can call Barry Toll of County Wastewater Management. He can give them advice and tips and different kinds of systems that they can put in. All that information is already available. So just saying.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. Well, first of all, I guess I have to disagree with Al, because you are a water purveyor, and I have seen gray water systems, sort of homemade ones with gray streaks going across backyards. I think people probably just don't know what they're doing. You go to the market, and there's all kinds of detergents, and nobody's telling anybody if you're doing gray water, don't use this or don't use that, or telling them what they should use. Other than that, I think we really need to get some information out there about this, because it's happening now and it's not being done in the proper way. But I have a question. Who will be updating this information, I'm hoping, to tailor it to Los Osos? I'd like to see it tailored to...
I can't remember their names. I'm sorry. They're more than certified or educated to be able to do that work. In fact, the presentation started by them saying that they had been approached by the county to look at Los Osos specifically. That was the beginning of the whole discussion, was to look at how Los Osos really is tailor fit for, you know, gray water simple systems versus dual plumbing or a full plumbing retrofit. This is not a system that require people to replumb their entire home. And they have plenty of experience to do that update for Los Osos.
Any additional speakers? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Is there any motions? I guess after hearing this, we'll just table it and reschedule. I'll take the action. I'll talk to Vicki Millage about the possibility, and then if we can then get in parallel some more clarification for the presentation, and then come back with approval either November or December, I think that would be fine. So with that, that's our last agenda item. And so at this time, we will have our second round of general public comment. And do we have any speakers that did not give general public comment earlier?
Are you ready?
Now I am. Thank you, Mr. Barrow.
Thank you, Joe. Mr. President and everybody else, I'm Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, and I want to talk a little bit about the coastal development permit for the Los Osos wastewater project that the county is working on. And in that regard, I think there's a number of environmental groups that have concerns that the Planning Commission did not address to be in compliance with the Coastal Act. And two of them have said that they wanted to have, well, actually more than that, said they wanted to have a step collection system because it was more protective of the groundwater and the environment. So gray water certainly would be an impact on sewer flows with the present design, because the design was done by the CSD consultant Montgomery Watson in 2003 and 4. And the flows since then, because conditions of conservation have decreased the amount of indoor flow to somewhere around 50 gallons per person, making it very difficult to achieve scouring speed with the density that we have now. So that would be one of the issues. Another issue would be the INI, the infiltration and inflow of the gravity sewer, would be removed by the STEP system. The exfiltration of the gravity system, which EPA says is between 5 and 10%, depending on the life of the, or where it is in the life of the life cycle of the project, is 20 million gallons on average a year. Over a 30-year life cycle, that's 600 million gallons of raw sewage that will form plumes that will be fairly near or very close proximity to the water lines, which have step stack system. And so we are appealing to the Coastal Commission the decision by the certification of the Coastal Development Permit and the CEQA by the county. And I think that the community should realize that if they get a gravity system, they're going to pay four times as much as if they would have a step system. Maybe less, maybe more, but certainly nothing close to what the county is proposing.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow.
You're welcome.
Next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson, three things. And I apologize if I misunderstood what you said, Joe, but I think the spike that we're talking about is in the consumption area of the water district, and that's where my concern is. Second point, on a lighter note, a director recently asked me if I was going to start the fall campaign announcing the fundraiser December 12th at the Community Center for the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. I said we definitely would be doing it in November, but he said, you know, might want to make an early comment since you're only meeting once a month. But some news for the community. I think the community should be very proud of itself. Los Osos now hosts the single largest fundraiser in the county for the shelter. It's a countywide event, but I think Los Osos can be proud of that. Participation has been countywide, but it's being talked about that Los Osos is the host, and all the way from supervisors on down have mentioned that they're very proud of Los Osos. The last comment deals with, you know, you've talked about water conservation and gray water, issues like that. I think the board members need to rewatch the section of the board meeting the other day dealing with the water conservation component of the project from start to finish and see where they ended up at the end with the conditions, because my opinion is they completely gutted the condition and the funding and the purpose of the original conditions and feelings and input from the Planning Commission. And if you watch it real close and you listen, my understanding of it is they don't plan on funding the toilet retrofit, but they may give you a rebate or some incentive if you do it earlier. The condition that talks about the toilet retrofit says that you must retrofit in order to hook up to the project. But it doesn't specifically say that it's to be used out of the $5 million that's in condition 98, 99.
And what was most disturbing for me is how that $5 million was going to be accumulated.
And even the one member from the Planning Commission there had indicated, I think some of that was the Planning Commission bears a responsibility for not being able at their meetings to bring a, like, for lack of a better term, maybe a workable condition to that meeting. So with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the meeting. And are there any other director comments? Before we have a number of upcoming meetings, committee meetings. I'll remind the Water Advisory Committee meeting on the 14th, the Emergency Services Joint Meeting with LOCAC on the 15th, the Finance meeting on the 19th. I wanted to reiterate the support for all the participants in the recent Coastal Cleanup Day. A number of directors participated that, and appreciate that. The October 5th, coming up October 25th, and LOCAC meeting will be on October 22nd. Any director closing comments? Director Kelly?
This weekend on Saturday is Creek Day, Creek Cleanup. We still don't have a creek necessarily locally, but all the creeks in our county are local enough. If you're interested, go to the county website, Margaret. Just go to the county, and it's Creek. I don't remember the website, but if you just do Creek Day Cleanup Slow, it'll pop up. Anyway, it's from 9 o'clock to noon, and one of the closest creeks for us is the one on Cal Poly campus.
Director Senate.
Well, I'll just close by saying good night, and that's it.
And I'll close by thanking both directors for showing up so that we could have a meeting. And staff, again, thank you for coming and staying. And the meeting is adjourned.